The joint session of the 62nd Wyoming Legislature, general session, will please come to order. Senator Coe and Representatives Throne and Brown will escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, their children, Mary and Pete, and His Excellency the Governor, Matthew H. Meade, to this joint session. This body will stand at ease to the sound of the gavel. The joint session will now come to order. All rise.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to announce the following guest: the Honorable Nancy Friedenthal, Chief United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Hastert, Representatives Byrd and Harshman. The Honorable Clarence Brimmer, Senior United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Nicholas, Representatives Nicholas and Paxton. The Honorable Alan Johnson, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Cooper, Representatives Wallace and Winters. The Honorable Scott Skovdahl, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senators Jim L. Anderson and Representatives Lockhart and Gay. The Honorable William Hill, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Peterson and Representatives Yagi and Summers. The Honorable E. James Burke, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Emmerich and Representatives Greer and Blake. Honorable Michael Davis, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Escobel and Representatives Patton and Connolly. The Honorable Cindy Hill, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, escorted by Senator Nutting and Representatives Teeters and Freeman. The Honorable Mark Gordon, State Treasurer, escorted by Senator Schiffer, Representatives Barlow and Semlich. The Honorable Cynthia Cloud, State Auditor, escorted by Senator Burns and Representatives Crone and Northrup. The Honorable Max Maxfield, Secretary of State, escorted by Senator Case and Representatives Blickery and Madden. The Honorable Marilyn Kite, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Perkins and Representatives Petroff and Stubson. The First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade, escorted by Senator Coe and Representatives Throne and Brown.
I would like to invite Reverend Veit to please give the invocation. Please remain standing for the invocation.
I offer a prayer as we begin this legislative session for 2013. Let us pray. Almighty God, we commend to your gracious care in keeping all the men and women of this 2013 legislative session. Be especially with our governor, Matthew Meade, as he discerns and decides on legislation, and as he speaks today, bless his words. Bless also the words of our Chief Justice, the Honorable Marilyn Kite. Be with our senators and representatives as they discern and decide on legislation. Defend all of them day by day with your heavenly grace, Strengthen them in their trials and temptations. Give them courage to face the challenges which beset them. And finally, grant them a sense of your abiding presence as they continue with the business before them, all for the benefit of this great state of Wyoming, for the United States of America, and for the world. For it is in your holy name that we pray. Amen.
Members, I don't see it. Members of the 62nd Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I present His Excellency, the Governor of the great state of Wyoming, Matthew H. Meade.
Morning. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Please, thank you. Very nice. Thank you. Please be, thank you. I am honored. I know that was to help shorten up my speech, but it will not work. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 62nd Wyoming Legislature, Secretary Maxfield, Auditor Cloud, Superintendent Hill, Chief Justice Kite, and members of the state and federal judiciary, citizens of Wyoming, all military members, all veterans, good morning. And a great special good morning to and a welcome to our new treasurer, Mark Gordon. Mark, you take the place of Joe Meyer, who was a dear friend to all of us and all of Wyoming. Joe, we miss you. And Mark, we look forward to your good work. And on a personal note, a good morning to my wife, Carol, and my kids. We have a 50-50 chance that they actually have an excused absence today. We began 2013 with optimism. With this new legislature, our 62nd, we have another opportunity to work on the 2013-14 budget and other significant issues that we face. We have the opportunity to take steps to position our state well for boom or non-boom times. We should build savings, reduce the standard budget, cut the size of government and streamline state regulations, decide on the funding mechanism for our highways, change some fiscal policies, and provide funding for major items such as wildfire expenses, landfills, assistance to local government, the Gillette Madison Water Project, the UW School of Engineering, and recognition of employee performance, to name a few. Unlike the federal government, we will continue to live within our means. We will keep our budget as flat as possible, not doubling every 10 years as it did the past decade. We will fund important items that position Wyoming well for the future, but always draw the line on overspending. There will be difficult decisions, to be sure, but what we do this session is all about progress for our state, not about our personal popularity. By making the difficult decisions, we have a chance to leave a better legacy for Wyoming. Whatever decisions we make this session, we are in the best place to make them. And ladies and gentlemen, that is because I am pleased to report the state of the state is strong. Now that's a simple but significant observation. The state of our state is strong. We are fortunate to be able to say that because I can assure you as I talk to governors from around the country, not everyone can. We are thankful for our energy resources, our tourism, our agriculture, our natural treasures, our businesses, and our greatest strength, our citizens. Now, before I get further along, I would like to recognize some of the remarkable citizens that I've asked to be here with us today. We have representatives of the Northern Arapaho and the Eastern Shoshone tribes. I very much appreciate the close working relationship that I have with the tribes. We work with a shared recognition that the reservation faces many of the challenges and many opportunities as the rest of Wyoming. Our cordial relationship will benefit both the reservation and the state. The tribal members that are here, please stand so we may recognize you. One of the great blessings for me as being governor is to get to work with men and women who serve in our Guard. And we never want to forget that these men and women are still being deployed overseas. I see them when they leave, and I try to be there when they get back. And I can tell you that as I have traveled on a couple occasions to where they work overseas, they serve in a way that brings great honor to our state and to our country. And we remember also that the Guard does great work here at home. 2 years ago, they had to fight floods all over the state. And by their work, they were able to prevent a lot of damage and even help in the saving of lives. The Guard distinguished itself last year in fighting fires. General Reiner, the Adjutant General of the Wyoming National Guard, please stand as we recognize you and all military members and all Guard members. Because the state and certainly this body and I recognize that education is one of our highest priorities. And we remember the key to education is great teachers. And that one teacher can make a positive difference in so many lives and in our society. It's appropriate this year, as I've done in previous years, to recognize their excellence. We have excellent teachers all over the state. And today we have with us Laura Drake. Laura is a third grade teacher at Goins Elementary School in Cheyenne. She started her career in Campbell County 23 years ago and has taught 11 years at Goins. Laura is the 2013 Wyoming Teacher of the Year. Laura, please stand and let us congratulate you. Now, outstanding students go hand in glove with outstanding teachers. Felix Weiss, as a student at Graybell High School, received first place in mathematics at the 2012 Wyoming State Science Fair. His winning project was titled Frequency and Distribution of Permutational and Cyclic Primes. Now, I was going to explain that to you, but because I can't even say it, I'll leave that to Felix. Felix, I am certain you have mathematics, more mathematics in your future, and the opportunities lie ahead of you as a student at the University of Wyoming. Felix, thanks for doing a good job. Please stand and let us recognize you. You will note that I've talked about an elementary teacher, a high school student, and now I'd like to talk about our great university. I'm pleased to have the president of the university with us today, Tom Buchanan. Tom is retiring after a long and successful career at the university. During his tenure, we have seen amazing strengthening of UW. We have outreach to community colleges at an unprecedented level. He has built areas of distinction in energy, the arts, and business. I observe watching the president, it's a very, very difficult job. But that one that Tom, with his wife Jackie, accomplished with great dedication and skill for the benefit of all the students and all of Wyoming. Tom, please stand as we thank you for your dedication to UW. Tom, I would note that our basketball teams over there seem to be giving you a wonderful send-off. And I'm even made more aware of that as that we've had people down in our office early this morning asking for tickets. We appreciate all that UW has to offer, as well as our great, great community colleges. We recognize in Wyoming the importance of higher education, whether it is a four-year or a two-year degree. And we also recognize the value of career and technical education. I would like to recognize those with technical ed training who roll up their sleeves every day to do the hard work. We too often take their contribution for granted. Our plumbers, welders, technicians, custodians, carpenters, heavy equipment operators, these are the people who do not always get the credit they deserve in building and maintaining Wyoming. Now, last year, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to tour a coal mine in Campbell County, and I talked to several of the coal miners, including an incredible woman who drove me in a truck as big as a house, literally. She told me how proud she is to work in a coal mine, to be able to provide for her family, and to be able to tell her kids that her work helps build Wyoming and powers the country, providing jobs for many others. Her story is not unique. It is the story of coal. And we're fortunate to have two people who represent coal mining here with us today, Nicole and John Japp. Collectively, they represent 45 years, roughly, of experience in mining. And I understand, Nicole, that her mother was a miner and that her daughter is a miner as well. They represent what coal brings to our country. They represent what coal brings to Wyoming, roughly $1 billion a year. They represent the fact that by their work, they help provide roughly 42% of electricity to the country. They represent all that coal means to our country. Please join me in welcoming two people who keep us warm in the winter and cool in the summer, Nicole and John Japp. While they do that hard work, they also take care of four kids and two Irish wolfhounds. And I've thought about that. I'm not sure if the coal, the kids, or the wolfhounds are that take more attention, but they do it all very well, and we thank them for being here. Some of the very good news over the last 2 years is our exponential growth in broadband connectivity and in keeping and recruiting data centers and other high-tech companies. We have a supercomputer. We have a Microsoft data center under construction. And we have small and medium-sized tech companies popping up all over our state. You just don't have to look far to see that we have an emerging tech sector that will begin to diversify our economy and provide another option for our young people. One such company is Ptolemy Data Systems, which opened its 6,000-square-foot data center facility in Sheridan last fall. The company is the brainchild of Ryan Mulholland. Tech is taking hold in Wyoming, and it's thanks to entrepreneurs like him. My broadband conference this past year was packed to the walls with amazing people just like Ryan. Ryan, please stand as we thank you and those in the tech company for what you do. Wyoming has struggled with the issue of suicide. My office and the Department of Health have been working to formulate a plan on how we can make improvements, and it's not easy. But one such person who's been leading the way in this effort is B.J. Ayers, the creator and executive director of Grace for Two Brothers Foundation. B.J. is a strong advocate for suicide prevention initiatives. She lost two sons to suicide, thus the creation of her foundation. She's recognized statewide as being an authority in suicide prevention. She does great things locally and across the state. BJ, we appreciate the courage you've shown, helping to prevent the tragedy of suicide. BJ, please stand as we thank you for your work. So when I say the state of the state is strong, it is more than dollars and cents. It's because of tremendous people like I've just introduced to you this morning. We are small in population, but we are big in talent. We are big in potential, and we know that our people are Wyoming's very best resource. On November 30th, I submitted my supplemental budget for fiscal year 2014. It's a balanced budget and reflects the hard work of the state and agencies and legislative committees. State agencies had to come up with budget reductions at 4% per the legislature's request. I doubled that and asked for 8% reductions based upon falling natural gas prices. Based upon the reduced revenue forecast in January 2012, we had all hoped for the best, but we planned for the worst, and our efforts paid off. While the revenue forecast of October 2012 showed more revenue than previously forecast, largely due to capital gains and other investment income, our planning for budget reduction was timely, and here are some of the reasons. One, we incurred unexpected and major wildfire expenses during last year's severe fire season. We need to pay for the fires of 2012 and prepare for the next season. Two, we're losing $700 million in abandoned mine land money, which has been federally committed to Wyoming. With the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, implementation of the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act and associated costs are on the way. Additional reasons are cuts were timely. The standard budget has more than doubled over the last decade, and that's an unsustainable trajectory. There's uncertainty about the country's debt and deficit and how it will affect businesses, states, and individuals. Congress has failed to pass a budget in years. Uncertainty alone affects us. And if revenue fluctuations from the last few years teach us anything, it's that revenue, especially mineral prices, fluctuate, and we need to be ready. So caution is in order, and budget cuts are in order. Overall, I've recommended a reduction to the standard budget of over 6%. This reduces ongoing spending by over $60 million a year. I took it agency by agency, not an across-the-board cut. I wanted to try to lead by example, so my proposal has 10% reduction for the governor's office and the governor's residence. Not easy, but doable. Some state agencies have 8% reductions, some less. For community colleges and the University of Wyoming, the reduction is about 6%. My recommendations also reduce the size of government, eliminating 86 vacant positions. Regarding budget reductions, we know that some feel they are too deep, and we listen to those people that say so. And we also know that some feel they're not deep enough. Now, for those of you who feel more cuts are needed, this is the session. This is the time to weigh in, not with conceptual ideas, but with specific cuts to specific agencies and specific programs. I have made my recommendations, and I look forward to seeing your budget reductions, as well as what amount of the $20 million that I have left on the table is still available at the end of the session. I've recommended funding for a rules revision project aimed at reducing and simplifying the nearly 18,000 rules we have in Wyoming. We have far too many rules, too many regulations, and they continue to grow at an exponential rate. Too many rules are cumbersome, and they are not business-friendly. Some other highlights. As I mentioned above, we have the opportunity to reduce the standard budget in a very deliberate and considered way at a time when revenue is flat but stable and our state continues to grow. In fact, you may have noted that last year we were the fourth fastest-growing state in the country. We face no immediate economic crisis. Therefore, this is the opportunity we should take, not miss. It is now the time to make cuts so that we will be prepared for what happens next, whatever it may be. My budget recommendation also includes $8.5 million for salary increases and $2.5 million for one-time merit-based bonuses for state employees, which includes UW and community college personnel. We implemented a new performance management system for the executive branch last year that I think is very good and still needs work. We've invested in a Hay study regarding compensation, and we want to keep the expertise in our state workforce, and we want to motivate the good achievers. I've also included $5 million to replenish the data center recruitment fund. We want to build on our success. I've asked for $5 million for the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust. We want to recognize the importance of conservation work. We want to recognize the value of balance, and for we forever want to have ranching and farming a big part of our Wyoming landscape. If our state is a team, each community is an important player. To give our team, the state of Wyoming, the best future, each community should be strong. Therefore, I have recommended up to $25 million for local governments. To live up to the legislative commitment, I have asked for money for the completion of the Gillette-Madison Water Project. We want to encourage infrastructure development and communities planning for their future. I have also included up to $20 million for landfills, and if funds are available, up to $30 million for energy projects of a transformational nature. The source for the majority of these recommendations is 2013 capital gains income. This is one-time money, and these are one-time expenses. They'll improve our future without growing our next budget. Last year, because of the rather gloomy revenue forecast, the legislature had the foresight to reserve $150 million out of the rainy day fund. I recommend $60 million of that amount go to cover last year's fire expenses and prepare for this year. Taken all together, my budget recommendations leave about $19.8 million on the table, which is available for legislatively driven priorities. The Tier 1 School of Engineering at UW deserves special mention. The school offers a great opportunity for our state. It will include high-level programs to be integrated with the NZ STEM facility, the NCAR supercomputer, and the School of Energy Resources. I appointed a task force, an outstanding task force, to help me define what a Tier 1 school should look like. You'll see the report and note that they recommend building the school from the inside out, not the outside in. In other words, before a brick is placed, we must develop what happens inside the building to be able to compete with any university in this country or any university in this world in certain specialty areas. I thank the task force for their continued work, and as I am confident of their work, I have asked to build on the legislative initiative and have asked for significant money for the school. I've also asked for some fiscal policy changes. The legislature has done yeoman's work over the years building a permanent mineral trust fund that now totals over $5 billion. Under our state constitution, 1.5% of that severance taxes must go into that fund. By what is a relatively new statute, an added 1% of severance taxes is directed to the mineral trust fund. The legislature can change the statute, and I propose now is the time. My proposal is for the statutory 1% of severance taxes to be redirected to the Legislative Stabilization Reserve Account, commonly called the Rainy Day Account, an account that can provide for emergencies, as was done last year, or for unanticipated tough economic times. Regarding schools, we have built many schools in the last decade. And if my budget is accepted, it will provide roughly $600 million for new schools over the next 5 years. So I have proposed the new coal lease bonus money go into rainy day savings rather than automatically be spent on building new schools. Now, under my proposal, we will continue to save more in the stabilization account. And by doing so, we will strengthen our ability to weather tough times as well as add greatly needed transparency. Healthcare. The implementation of the ACA and associated costs are looming. Despite my strong objection to the ACA, despite my asking the Attorney General to fight the case in the U.S. Supreme Court, it is the law of the land. We now have to play the cards in our hand. We have to make decisions regarding Medicaid expansion and insurance exchanges. Last year, this discussion on state-based exchange was suspended. That and a lack of answers from the federal government mean the federal government will likely run an exchange in Wyoming when exchanges start operating in 2014. But a federal exchange could be temporary because we can choose a state exchange down the road. I want to know if that's the right way to go. We need to make an informed choice. Therefore, one of my budget recommendations seeks $100,000 to assist in the process of deciding what exchange is best for Wyoming. Of course, in addition to the question of the exchange, we have before us the issue of Medicaid expansion. It's a tough question, but we must keep an open mind. We must look at and review the work of Director Forslund, the Department of Health, and other groups that want to weigh in on the issue. I have asked in my budget money for the mandatory expansion, but not for the optional expansion. The mandatory expansion is for those presently eligible for Medicaid, but for whatever reason are not yet on Medicaid, and it will include about 7,000 new children. In preparation for the session, so that we can have a full discussion and debate on this, I asked Director Forslund to prepare a budget asking for the full expansion, both the mandatory and the optional, to evaluate the program on a cost-benefit analysis and to make that information available to all of you. We must make the decision now based upon what is best for Wyoming citizens. Unfortunately, there is no magic wand waving. There is no approach that will extricate us from the ACA. It is upon us, and we must act. Because of the enormity of the law, because so many questions need to be answered and so many federal rules still need to be promulgated, and because legislative spending authority is required, I have not committed the state to the optional expansion. But we have 12 months until 2014 before full implementation. So where do we go? The federal government has recently committed to more flexibility, but they're still trying to put together the many needed rules. I suggest today, now is the time we work on and over the next year preparing. We should continue to seek answers. We should continue to prepare. We should look at what set of conditions we would need to accept an exchange and an expansion package. Let's decide what we want. We may know what we do not want, but what is it we do want? And let's make the pitch to the federal government. In other words, let us try within the law that is upon us to find the best deal, the best fit for Wyoming. To do nothing puts the full brunt of the ACA upon us. Everything will be dictated by the federal government without an opportunity to tailor the law to our needs. Director Forslund is prepared to offer options. This body has the opportunity to develop what we would like to see in that request. Now, perhaps the federal government will not agree to our terms. We can say no if they do not. But it's far better that we express our terms and make a request than to not make a request and get a package without our input. Let's view this as an opportunity for innovation. Wyoming has led before with innovative health care, and we can lead again to find state-specific solutions that are right for us. One of Wyoming's noted historians recently informed me about an organization that existed in our territorial days. Between 1885 and 1889, Wyoming cattlemen and cowboys formed and participated in the Fetterman Hospital Association in the small town of Fetterman, at the site of Fort Fetterman. The association has been described as the first cooperative health organization in the country. Cowboys subscribed individually through monthly pay deductions, and cattlemen also subscribed to group memberships for their employees. In return for the subscribing fees, cowboys received a nearly full range of medical services. This is an example of Wyoming leading early in our history to provide health care to a group that needed it. We are challenged again now to find ways to provide access to health care for Wyoming citizens. I believe we're up to the task. Now, one of the concerns I hear about health care is we have too many people not paying a fair share of the services they are provided. That's bad policy. I believe that's a fair concern. The question for us is, does that notion translate to other areas of government? With regard to roads, for example, we should recognize that for every dollar we pay in federal fuel tax, we get $1.60 back. We are subsidized with federal dollars from other states. The flip side of that is when we drive a few miles south into Colorado or other bordering states, we pay more to drive on their roads. Those in Colorado drive a few miles north, and they pay less to drive on ours. In effect, we subsidize out-of-state drivers, and I believe we've subsidized out-of-state drivers long enough for the privilege of driving on our roads. It is a conservative principle to pay as you go rather than using savings to pay for an ongoing expense. It is a conservative principle to pay as you go rather than creating a debt for others to fix. That is what Congress is doing. That is what they've been doing, creating a debt and deficit for our kids and our grandkids to pay. Not properly maintaining and funding highways today is the same concept. We are creating a debt for those who come after us. We're creating a problem for those who come after us to solve. We need a long-term funding source for roads. Now, a bit of history on this. My first session, I asked this body to divert a portion of severance tax as a long-term funding source for roads. That suggestion was rejected, and saying that understates it by a mile. That suggestion was soundly rejected. Now, some of your members have proposed over the last couple of years a bill to look at the option of toll roads. That, too, was rejected. And while I'm not a fan of toll roads, I at least supported that idea to take a look at it. That was rejected, and this year the Department of Transportation has asked for $50 million. $50 million in supplemental budget from general funds. I rejected that request. So we're at an impasse. I don't want to continue every year to deplete large amounts of general fund that could be used for education, for savings, for health, for seniors, for the disabled, in order to fund what is one of the most basic functions of government, providing sound infrastructure. There is no sense in talking about economic development if you don't have water, sewer, basic infrastructure. Roads are the backbone for so much of our commerce, our recreation, and our day-to-day living. It is an issue of safety. If we fail to maintain our roads, it's no different than failing to maintain a car or a home. The price goes up, and a higher price will be paid for poor maintenance. That is not a plan for being fiscally conservative. Some of you ask, is there room for improvement and savings within the Department of Transportation? Absolutely. And I'm working with DOT to do just that. Is there sufficient savings to provide the $130 million plus per year that is needed? No. Now, it is easy to talk about those cuts as a concept, and it's certainly easy politically to talk about cuts and how you're going to do them. But if you believe there are sufficient cuts of $130 million plus that can be found to fund roads, I need to see the proposal. What I propose is an increase in fuel tax. And in the alternative, I propose what I proposed 2 years ago, the use of dedicated mineral funding money. Our highway infrastructure needs attention, and we need action, not more words. We have talked this thing into the ground and haven't moved the needle. And we need to remember, we are not Washington, D.C. We are Wyoming. We get things done. Let's get this done. Education. We've been fortunate that as a state, we can identify our priorities and also have the financial means to support many of those priorities. Education is a top priority for me, for this body, and the state superintendent. Wyoming has spent billions in recent years on education efforts. We spend more per student than nearly any other state, but we are not the best in terms of results. Dollars spent without design, without a shared game plan, will continue to be expensive and unproductive. Without a common understanding and shared goals by the legislature, the Department of Education, and my office, we're working against each other, or at least not with each other. We must be on the same sheet of music, and it is clear we are not. Discussions between the Department of Education, the legislature, and my office should focus on issues such as high school graduation rates, dual immersion language opportunities, charter schools, career technical education, or how to minimize the potential for school violence. We instead are wasting time and money wrangling with problems that should and can be avoided. Last session, the legislature, recognizing that we were not headed in the right direction, provided additional duties to my office and LSO to assist the Department of Education. It was a good plan, but it did not work out as we had all hoped. We have seen that siphoning off pieces of the Department of Education leads to inconsistency and to the friction we have seen over the last year. This friction may be regarding accountability, with regard to ACT testing, substituting for PAWS, or how we categorize positions at the Department of Education. We are mired down with disputes that are not necessary. We are frustrated. More important than our frustration, much more important, is that we're not setting the stage for the best education system possible for our children. We've got the funding. We've got the buildings. We've got the great teachers. Now we need to increase high school graduation rates, improve college readiness, and have a long-term path to excellence. We owe it to our kids and to our state. There needs to be a clear message to people, administrators, everyone, that Wyoming will not accept the status quo and that Wyoming will have a predictable, accountable, long-term path to educational excellence. Our state's future literally depends on it because today's students are tomorrow's citizens, workers, and leaders. Parents and teachers do not care about who is to blame. They care about results. As we demand accountability, we ourselves have to be accountable. We want our paper's headlines to speak of results, of innovation in education rather than name-calling or blame or failing grades. It is up to us to do the work to get the headlines we seek. The headline that Wyoming is progressing towards excellence in education. This is the session to get us back on track. There's a lot of challenges ahead, but we also have to remember we've had some great successes. It's been a very good year in many ways. Last year, we made headway with data centers and other business recruitment efforts. With broad public input, we are preparing a state energy strategy, and with the legislature's needed help, we will have an action plan for the responsible development of our natural resources that makes it a priority to balance our energy, our economy, and our environment. We are leading the charge. We undertook state management of wolves and held our first wolf hunt. We joined with other states to encourage the development of natural gas vehicle fleets. We continue to lead the country in state regulation of hydraulic fracturing. We pursued litigation against the federal government to protect our state's interests. And year in and year out, we have great judges around the state who are providing justice to our citizens. Year in and year out, we have a citizen legislature that brings great expertise and common sense to Cheyenne. We saw technology services this past year consolidate into the Department of Enterprise Technology Services, and it's working extremely well. And as we begin the session, we remember our work here is not about us. Our work is not about us or our political careers. It is about our children, our families, and the state we love, and about our future. If past is prologue, we will accomplish all that needs to be done. I thank you for your work. God bless you, and God bless Wyoming.
Governor Meade, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Members of the 62nd Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you the Honorable Marilyn Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor and Mrs. Meade, members of the 62nd Wyoming Legislature, elected officials, members of the judiciary, and citizens of the state of Wyoming. It is an honor to speak to you today on behalf of the men and women of the Wyoming judiciary. Thank you, President Ross and Speaker Lubnow, for the invitation to do so. Our founders established different responsibilities for the three independent branches of government. However, we share the obligation to serve the public and to fulfill the charge given to us by our Constitution. I speak for all the members of the Wyoming judiciary when I wish you all of the energy and wisdom that you will need to address the difficult issues ahead of you this session. You may have noticed that Justice Boyd is not with us here today. He unfortunately underwent back surgery yesterday, but he sends his regards as well. We welcome the many new members of this body recently elected and look forward to working with you as we carry out our respective duties. I am pleased to report to you the developments in our branch of government over the last year, and there have been many. We have said goodbye to many long-serving judges and welcomed many new ones. Both our dedicated Judicial Nominating Commission and the Governor have been performing their constitutional duties in that regard. The legislature authorized a new district court judge in Johnson County, and that position was filled by William Edelman, a former assistant county attorney in Gillette. And he is enjoying performing his duties in a brand new courthouse in Buffalo that, if you haven't seen, you should take the time to look. In Sweetwater County, Judge Jerry Rickman retired after 23 years of dedicated service and was replaced by Richard Lavery, an experienced attorney from Evanston and the former president of the Wyoming State Bar Association. Judge John Sampson, a longtime circuit judge in Sheridan County, retired after serving 21 years. In his place, Governor Meade appointed Shelley Cundiff, an experienced trial lawyer who will be sworn into office this Friday. And as I reported to you last year, our own Justice Michael Golden reached the mandatory retirement age of 70, and after serving 24 years on our Supreme Court, has retired. Governor Meade had a relatively rare opportunity to appoint a member of our court and chose one of Laramie County's sitting district judges, Judge Michael Davis, and we have welcomed him and put him right to work. His appointment created yet another opening, which was filled by Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephen Sharp, who will be sworn into office at the beginning of February. And if that was not enough, longtime Campbell County District Judge Dan Price has announced that he is retiring after 22 years of dedicated service, and the process for selecting his replacement is underway. Judge Price is with us today, and it will be his last joint session, so I would ask us to recognize his service. Most of you will recall last year when we discussed the need to increase judicial salaries, we predicted a significant turnover in our judicial ranks and that a fair salary was essential to attracting strong candidates. And as you can see, your action to increase those salaries was timely, and it had the desired result of encouraging experienced attorneys to leave their careers and enter public service. The positive impact of your decision last year will be felt by countless Wyoming citizens over the years. On a sad note, former Supreme Court Justice Walter Urbankite, who was also a member of this body, passed away, and the Supreme Court held its traditional memorial service in his honor. The judicial branch has, with your leadership and continued its progress into the digital age. We rolled out the new uniform district court management system in three pilot courts and hope to have all the courts on by the end of this year. This was a huge task, 23 different counties with 5 different computer systems, designing and implementing a uniform system and transferring all of the data required extraordinary dedication and creativity of our IT staff, as well as the cooperation and the time of 23 elected district court clerks. From first reports, there are a few glitches and much satisfaction. We now begin the equally difficult tasks of building the judges' side of that system and an electronic filing system and the similar system in the circuit courts. This entire effort represents a significant investment by the state and by this body in the improvement of the delivery of judicial services to Wyoming citizens. You may recall that we reported over the last few years the progress that we had made in providing for online payment of citations in our circuit courts. That system is working well, and over $10 million have been collected 24 hours a day from all over the world. The speed and accessibility of that system has resulted in lower accounts receivable and an increase in the time value of the money collected. And by the way, it was accomplished by our IT staff without any additional funding. While the payment side of the ledger was being implemented, we worked with the executive branch to create a system whereby the Highway Patrol could enter its citations electronically, further enhancing the efficiency of the system. It's difficult to describe the effort required both by our IT staff as well as the staff of the Highway Patrol to get to the point this last month where officers in Laramie County are actually piloting the system and it is working. I want to thank the leadership of the Department of Transportation and the Highway Patrol for their steadfast support that was critical to reaching this milestone. And in particular, I would like to thank one member of that staff for his extraordinary personal effort over many years and through many changes in personnel and other challenges, because without his efforts, this project would still be on the drawing board. Captain Bill Morris is in the audience today, and I would like to have him stand and be recognized for his service. Captain Morris. While these e-citations will be of great help to our circuit courts, they may have an even greater impact on the efficiency of law enforcement in our state by increasing the speed with which citations enter the system, as well as freeing up officers to perform their duties and their difficult jobs of protecting the public. Two final milestones on the technology front. We are increasing our use of video conferencing, which helps avoid unnecessary travel for judges and law enforcement. We hope to make use of that same system to minimize the cost of providing court interpreters, the demand for which is increasing dramatically. For example, last month, one district court judge had to use his entire interpreter budget on 1 3-day trial. And so it's obvious that controlling this budget item will be of increasing importance. Also this last month, the Supreme Court began streaming its oral arguments live online, as you all have been for some time. We hope to have these arguments archived online as well sometime this year. And for the first time, lawyers and citizens throughout the state of Wyoming, and not just here in Cheyenne, can observe the operation of our court real time. We have devoted substantial effort this year to responding to your call to reduce budgets while maintaining the same level of service to the public. As you know, folks like to have their budgets cut about as much as they like to have their taxes raised. Senator Wallop recounted to me years ago that his old friend in the Senate, Senator Russell Long, said it best when he described his constituents as saying, "Don't tax me, don't tax thee, tax that guy under the tree." Well, our Board of Judicial Policy and Administration, which for you new legislators is made up of judges from all levels of the courts, has proposed budget cuts to the JAC which will accomplish the 4% reduction over the next few years. However, courts don't have optional programs that can be eliminated. In the operation of our library, our administrative staff, and our circuit courts, we're making those budget cuts where we can and still function. Individual district judges have also made cuts to their budgets. Based on case filings and workload studies, we are proposing to close the satellite courts in Dubois, Lovell, and Powell and operate those courts in the county seats just as we do in the rest of the counties across the state. We don't make this proposal lightly, and we recognize that there is some local opposition to our decision. Some local governments have even offered to pay the cost of keeping those courts open, and we want you to know that the board and the court believe that would be absolutely the wrong approach and would take us away from the direction we took 20 years ago to go to a uniform state-funded court system. But we are working with the JAC to try to address the concerns of the citizens in those communities and still achieve some savings, and I believe we can do that. This effort to become more efficient has shown us all how tough it is if we are asked to make future cuts in the future. We have also identified statutes that require us to spend money unnecessarily. For us to make significant budget cuts, this body will have to be prepared to change those statutes. The BJPA, the board again, has recommended legislation to allow us to stop distribution of unnecessary copies of books, to phase out full-time magistrates in our circuit court system where that is appropriate, and to allow district judges to determine what proceedings should be transcribed instead of mandating unnecessary and costly transcripts. Now, Some judges have differing opinions about the wisdom of these proposed changes, and I'm sure you won't be surprised to learn that judges have opinions and that they differ. It's sort of like the joke about the Supreme Court justice and the law professor and the trial judge that go duck hunting. Now, under state law at this time of year, they can only shoot a duck. So it's very important that what they shoot is a duck. A group of birds flies overhead. The Supreme Court justice jumps up and says, "I conclude those are ducks. I know this from applying the 6-part, 8-factor test established in Goose versus Duck," which she then explains in great detail. By the time she has finished her explanation, the ducks have flown out of range, and she sits down. A few minutes later, a second group flies over, and the law professor stands up and says, "I conclude those are ducks. But the test of Goose versus Duck is ridiculous, because it's based on historically oppressed species and ignores the insights of animal behavioral economics." The professor continues to explain all of this in great detail, but by the time he's finished, the ducks have flown away, and he sits down. A few minutes later, a third group of ducks fly overhead, and the trial judge stands up, squeezes off 3 rounds, blows 3 birds out of the sky, turns to his friends and says, "Gee, I hope those were ducks." We face the same challenges you do in affecting real budget savings. Nobody likes them in their own backyard. So as you hear differing opinions about our proposed budget measures, we urge you to support the Board of Judicial Policy and Administration's efforts to be a good steward of state funds and to make the judicial branch more fiscally efficient. While we're working hard to reduce our budget, we also support the governor's position that while cuts need to be made where appropriate, to do our jobs, we need dedicated, fairly compensated employees. It is the first time in our memory that the governor has included the judicial branch employees in his compensation proposal, and we hope that now and in the future this approach will result in judicial branch employees' salary increases being treated equitably with the rest of state employees. The returning members of this body will remember that 2 years ago, when the executive branch received pay increases based on the market, judicial employees were, I think, unintentionally left out. Based on our hay analysis, we have sought funds to treat our employees like those of the other two branches and have asked the JAC to correct that injustice to judicial employees. Finally, I must report to you a disturbing development in our branch of government this past year. At the end of August, thankfully not while court was in session, a gun was fired into the metal building that houses the Riverton Circuit Courtroom. Entering the wall behind the judge's bench, passing over the defense table and over the area where the audience is seated, and lodged in the wall on the opposite side of the courtroom. The perpetrator was not identified, and the investigation continues. This incident made very real the need for our judges, employees, witnesses, jurors, and citizens who use our courts to be safe. As you know, in our state, court facilities are provided by the county governments. The Court Security Commission and the Board of Judicial Policy supported Fremont County's application for emergency state funds for the short-term action of placing large metal containers around that building to protect it from an attack from a distance. But its metal exterior could be easily breached by anyone close to the building. We understand the Fremont County Commission is working on a long-term solution, and if in that effort additional state assistance is necessary, we would urge you to support those efforts. In closing, although there is some natural tension that always exists between the branches of government, Wyoming continues to benefit from the respect we show each other. And in that spirit, I want you to know that we appreciate the leadership of the executive and legislative branches of government and the respect that they have shown us. Our only responsibility is to uphold the laws of this state embodied in our Constitution and in the statutes that you adopt. In my effort to explain what judges do, I was struck recently by the words of United States Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, who, among many other accomplishments, was the chief architect and prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials of Nazi criminals in 1945. His precondition for assisting in that heroic effort was that the defendants be presumed innocent and only convicted by the rule of law. In his opening statement, Justice Jackson said this, that four great nations, flushed with victory and stunned with injury, stay the hand of vengeance and voluntarily submit their captive enemies to the judgment of the law, is one of the most significant tributes that power has ever paid to reason. While the work of our judges that we do is in less dramatic circumstances, the fundamental principle is exactly the same. Judges must employ reason through the application of law. In courtrooms all over the state, the men and women of the Wyoming judiciary apply the law every day, whether it be to those convicted of heinous violent crimes or to substance abusers who commit grossly negligent acts or to those involved in domestic disputes fueled by anger or economic distress or sheer human failings. And they do so with dedication and honor, striving at all times to put aside personal beliefs and emotions, as well as popular opinions, to apply the rule of law. We wish all of you well in the work that you do during this next session as you strive to find solutions to the problems and challenges of our state. Good luck and Godspeed.
Chief Justice Kite, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Senator Coe, Representative Throne, and Brown, will you please escort the First Lady of Wyoming and the Governor from the chamber? Senator Perkins, Representative Petroff, and Stubson, will you please escort the Chief Justice from the chamber? A little while. Mr. Speaker, thanks to you and the members of the House of Representatives for being our host this morning. Mr. Senate Majority Floor Leader Nicholas.
Mr. President, I move that this joint session be dissolved.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader Rothfuss.
Mr. President, I second that motion.
All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is carried.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House be in recess until 2 p.m.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The House is in recess until 2 p.m.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader Nicholas.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be reassessed at not 2 p.m.
Reassessed? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The Senate is adjourned until 2 p.m.